From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Patrick Llewellyn is the CEO of a company called 99 Designs. It does one primary thing really well, which is that it runs design contests. So, for example, let's say that you need a logo for your new company. You pay to post a brief on 99 Designs, and a ton of designers from around the world create a logo and submit it.
Our platform's fully functioning. The brief goes up, the designs are submitted, you're on the platform, you're providing feedback to a bunch of designers, you then select the designer whose design, you know, you want to use.
Then you pick the one you like, that designer gets paid, and you have yourself a new logo. Boom. Simple. But this leaves out all sorts of other opportunities. What about people who want to hire a single designer? What about people who just want a little design tweak and not some full-blown contest thing? Patrick was worried about leaving those opportunities untapped, and therefore leaving a lot of money on the table. So in 2013, 99 Designs launched a spin-off brand called Swiftly. It handled design work in a totally different way that we'll get into later, but suffice to say, it was intended for a different audience. And between 99 Designs and Swiftly, Patrick figured he'd cover more of the market and become a bigger, better, more useful company. But after a few months, Patrick noticed a problem.
You know, I regularly spend time with the support team or at least around them. You know, my desk wasn't too far away. And I constantly heard our support team spelling out Swiftly to 99 Designs customers.
You can imagine the conversation, right? A 99 Designs customer calls with a question and the 99 Designs customer service person says, oh, you should try out Swiftly. And the customer is like, what? Swiftly? And the customer service person says, yeah, Swiftly. And you'd think Patrick would be happy to hear this, but he was not.
So the reality of it was we hadn't really found much of a new bucket of customers. We were just taking 99 Designs customers and moving them over to Swiftly, and that was confusing then.
And this got Patrick thinking harder about Swiftly's impact on his business. It wasn't just confusing customers, it was confusing his own internal team. How many resources should go to 99 Designs and how many should go to Swiftly? Are the teams totally separate or do they work together, even when their tasks kind of overlap?
It was just, you know, you could see wasted engineering effort.
Patrick had stumbled into what I think is fair to call the curse of the problem solver, which is what we're going to explore this episode. Consider it. Entrepreneurs are problem solvers, and in the process of solving one problem, they are guaranteed to encounter other problems worth solving too. And then they can't help themselves. They have to go for that other problem as well. They think that they can handle both. But hold up. Sometimes solving a new problem is the problem. Sometimes, crazy as it sounds for a podcast called Problem Solvers, some problems need to be left unsolved, at least for a little while. Patrick has spent quite a bit of time shaking off the curse of the problem solver, and to great results. His company became profitable for the first time in 2017 and expected to hit $60 million in revenue that year. So, how did he do it? How did he shake the curse? And what became of Swiftly, the solution that became its own problem? We will get into it all right after the break. If you run a small business, you know there is nothing small about it. Dell's Small Business Technology Advisors are here to help with solutions tailored to your business. Get the latest technology like Dell laptops with Intel Core processors. Plus, with free shipping and a price match guarantee, you know you're always getting the best deals. Talk to a Dell Small Business Advisor today at 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL. And now, our second sponsor. People hate calling companies and not getting an answer. And frankly, companies hate missing calls and missing potential new customers. And yet... So much ringing! That is what Ruby Receptionists is designed to solve. All of your calls are answered live by a team of friendly, professional remote receptionists helping you secure customers and build a thriving company. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby delivers exceptional experiences to your callers by answering calls in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, addressing common questions, making follow-up calls, and more, just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. Most importantly, they sound like they're sitting in your office. To learn more or get started, visit them online at callruby.com, or better yet, call them 855-330-LIVE. That's 855-330-LIVE. They will pick up. All right, we're back. So here's the funny thing about 99designs and its Swiftly spinoff problem. 99designs itself was a spinoff product of an earlier company. The origin story goes like this. In 1999, two guys in Melbourne, Australia started a site called SitePoint that offers resources for web developers. And as websites tended to do back then, SitePoint had a message board where people could hang out. And some started playing a game called Photoshop Tennis, where one person would submit a fictional brief for a design, and all the designers on the message board would whip up some designs and post them. And then eventually, things took a turn.
One of them says one day, hey, here's my brief for a logo. Submit your ideas to me, and if I pick one of you, I'll pay you. The designers are like, hell yeah, we're doing it for fun. We'll do it for money. So they initially, it was designer to designer, trading amongst themselves. Then the developers heard about what was going on, so they dived into the forum.
So now actual commerce is happening on these forums, and the forums are getting super busy and messy. The founders of SitePoint see this as an opportunity, and they start charging people to post their briefs in the forum. And then SitePoint starts building out services to support all this design work, like ways for people to pay each other for designs and a place to upload files and a way to exchange copyright. And by 2008, this whole thing grows big enough that the SitePoint founders decide to spin the service off on its own, and they call it 99designs. 18 months later, 99designs hires Patrick to bring the company to America, where it can reach a new user base and start raising some serious capital. So Patrick moves his family from Australia to San Francisco and begins growing this thing.
Originally, my original title was President North America. I used to joke to my mates that it was me and Obama.
99designs starts growing quickly. Patrick raises a good amount of money. Tim Ferriss mentions the company in the 4-Hour Work Week. Lots of startups start using it. And in January of 2011, Patrick becomes CEO. Soon, he's looking not just at growing the existing business, but at how 99designs could become a more full-service design company. And there was an obvious problem that needed solving, which was that 99designs was getting disintermediated all over the place. And if that word sounds familiar, by the way, it could be because episode 1, the very first episode of Problem Solvers, was about disintermediation. That's what happens when a company connects two parties, and then those two parties cut out the middleman and just start working together directly. So in 99designs' case, that looked a little like this. Let's say I post a design brief, there's a contest, I pick a winner. And then I contact the winner and I say, hey, I'd love for you to do more work for me, but there's no reason to keep working through 99designs, so let's just cut them out and I'll pay you directly.
We kind of knew that there was these relationships were being formed and fostered off our platform. And we wanted to capture that on the platform because we felt like understanding these relationships are going to be really important in understanding the value that we're bringing to both designers and customers over the long term.
And this is a critical point, so let's just pause to really consider it. Yes, 99designs was getting disintermediated, but the problem, as Patrick saw it, wasn't that 99designs was missing its financial cut of whatever work was happening after the design contest. The problem that he saw was not the missing money in the disintermediation. That stuff was small potatoes next to the really big potato, which was data. Because it was getting disintermediated, 99designs wasn't able to watch how designers and clients were working with each other after they were connected. And knowing that stuff was the real market opportunity.
We wanted to build the biggest data set around people getting design in the world so that we could actually get to the point where we could use that data. So as you're starting to fill in your brief, we're already thinking about which design is the right match, right? So that we can get hyper efficient around figuring out who in the world's the best person to create what you're looking for.
So in late 2011, 99designs launches a product called 1-to-1. It's basically a platform after the contest. So clients post the contest, picks a winner, and now 1-to-1 allows them to keep working together inside 99designs. And it offers stuff like customer service and copyright agreements and a way to process payments, basic useful stuff. And Patrick figures that this is really just the first step towards a future where 99designs might one day just connect a client with a designer. Like skip the contest thing entirely. You come to 99designs with a project and 99designs identifies the right designer for you and boom, done. That's the future. But at launch, the goal of 1-to-1 was just to get more and more people to use it and keep gathering that valuable data about what they're doing on the platform.
we've started to get this one-to-one thing happening and it's making sense as a follow-on tool. We've done a bunch of internationalization. So in 2012, we went from, you know, one currency and one language to, you know, three languages and, you know, 13 currencies or something. So we sort of had done that. And so then come 2013, we're like, okay, well, we've done one-to-one to a bit and got that moving. We've got some international markets happening. We've kind of built that into our DNA. So they're relatively easy now to roll out new languages. And then I was like, cool, what's next?
What's next? Two words pregnant with potential and pregnant with danger, because what's next can either build upon your momentum or completely distract from it. And here, 99designs decides that what's next is this.
Small design tasks fast.
Small design tasks fast. Because design contests were slow and focused on big things like logos, but what if you need a smaller task, just a little tweak or an add-on to an existing design template? That's a big market, and Patrick wanted it. But he figured that launching a service like this inside of 99designs would just create confusion. So in early 2013, he took some of the 99designs team and said, okay, you are now launching a new brand of ours called Swiftly.
So, you know, it was kind of like, yeah, let's create a startup, right? Let's create a startup so that we had a startup mentality of the work. We had a new brand that we didn't have to worry about the baggage of design contest and all that it was. And we just put it out there as get anything done, you know? And so it was like, you know, $15 design fixes. And, you know, all you needed was to upload a file, describe the basic attribute. We then had a subset of our design community that we curated so that we kind of knew who was online and they could pick from that work queue. And that was the Swiftly premise.
Internally, Swiftly was treated as a completely separate entity to 99designs. It had its own logo, its own team, its own space within the office. But challenges for this little startup within a startup came very swiftly, so to speak.
When you offer people they can get any task done, they actually don't do any because they need you to help them to find the problem. So we started looking at niches, and so it was like photo retouching or, you know, and I thought we had a really good interactive site that explained all of this to you. But, you know, in reality, it didn't work as well as we'd like. We did have hardcore customers who loved us, and we had, you know, good growth for the first 12 months, you know, like the sort of startup growth that would probably get you funded as a standalone business. But as part of a bigger thing, we were like, this is a lot of resources. It's, you know, it's kind of draining. It's not really covering itself. You know, it's not covering its own costs. It's, you know, it's a loss-making part of the organization.
Tell me more about what it was draining. Like, what were you seeing?
I mean, look, so It was resources, standalone resources, who would only think about that one problem set, which was really powerful in helping solve that problem. But then as an organization, sort of sucked away a little bit of your focus. You know, as you described in the organization to the team, it was not fracturing, but what we were achieving, what we wanted to achieve, which was this small autonomous unit, we did. By achieving a small autonomous unit meant that we had a group that we wasn't really part of the sort of almost like wasn't part of the broader vision, mission, you know, sort of operating structure of the organization. And because we created it like a little startup, it literally, you know, caused finance problems because, you know, it didn't sit on our commerce systems. It had its own payment relationships. It had its own brand. It had its own creative. It had, you know, its own marketers, its own marketing accounts. It spent, so it was just like, you know, it certainly was self-contained. Right. But that also was quite fracturing within the broader construct of, you know, what was still a relatively small team. You know, we're probably 75 people at that time or whatever. And so, you know, maybe a little more, but it was kind of that. And then also Mindshare.
Patrick let Swiftly run for 18 months trying to find its footing. But by 2015 and 2016, the venture capital market was starting to get shaky and Patrick decided it was really time to get 99designs to profitability. Because up until then, it was a typical Silicon Valley company running purely on venture capital as it lost money on its way to being sustainable. But Patrick didn't like how that might end. He didn't want to run the risk of running out of cash and having to let go all of these people who had come to 99designs, who had trusted him, who shared his vision. So he drafted an 18-month plan. In 18 months, they'd be profitable. And that instantly changed the way he and everyone at the company thought.
So we created this theme around being masters of our own destiny, which is like, look, if we get to profitability, then it doesn't matter. We will always be able to exist as an organization. We will always be able to support our community of designers and customers, and, you know, the employees, and push it forward. And so we set down that path, and you know, part of setting down that path was like, all right, we have to really rationalize all that we're doing.
Every company needs a moment like this, a moment when its goals snap into focus, when it looks at itself with fresh eyes and says, this is what must stay and this is what must go. And for 99designs, this was that moment. It had to put everything through a filter of what gets us to profitability. Is this getting us there? Is that? And Swiftly simply wasn't. Now, at first, Patrick wasn't ready to just kill off Swiftly. He tried to rebrand it as 99designs Tasks, which simplified some of the branding and marketing problems, but internally, it was still too much of a distraction. He needed to centralize everyone, to get his entire team back onto one task, one mission. So, he eliminated Swiftly and shifted its staff back onto 99designs. Almost immediately, he says, 99designs improved. Old Swiftly engineers could now come in and help 99designs build better tools for its customers and its designers, and the mission became clearer. Headcount stabilized. Revenue grew from $56.1 million in 2016 to $60 million in 2017. Money being paid to designers on the site grew so that they're now averaging $3.5 million a month. And critically, as I said at the top of the show, 99designs reached its goal. In 2017, it became profitable. So you might think, great, Patrick made a mistake with Swiftly, he killed it off, and that was that. But the story is more complex than that. Swiftly may have been a mistake in execution, but it still taught 99designs a great deal.
We've learned a lot of great stuff out of Swiftly. Like, we realized that if we could get that match right and we could curate and understand which designers were online at what time and what their skills were, we could help them make a meaningful, you know, income as well as solve customers' problems really effectively. And so we're like, cool, we don't want that to be a standalone product. We actually need to learn, take what the best bits of that and actually apply it across the core of our business. And so we essentially said, let's park it. Let's focus on solving custom design for now. And part of that was improving the contest experience, but then it was also starting to think about how could we bring one-to-one projects to the fore? How can we do a good job of providing a designer search functionality? How can we actually help customers discover designers, make the match, and get them working together, not relying on contest being the mechanic? And so, you know, we just wanted to get our energies around custom design. And so that's where we put our focus. And with the view that once we solve those problems, we get matching right, we understand who's online, then reintroducing, you know, the Swiftly mechanic of real-time design will be within our reach, but it will be on one platform, one set of user experience, one set of file management, one set of accounts, you know, all of that.
In other words, Swiftly showed 99designs what its future could look like. It's just that 99designs wasn't ready for that future. It still had work to do in the present. And this is the other side of the curse of the problem solver. It's not just that problem solving is dangerous. It's that solving problems out of order is dangerous. You have to solve level one before going to level two. And here with 99designs and Swiftly, it was almost as if Patrick tried jumping from level one to level three. It just doesn't work that way. But in the process, he did get a good peek at what level three looks like. And hey, it looks pretty good. It looks really promising. And it'll still be there waiting for him when his company is ready. And that's our episode. But wait, before you go, please hear me out on a few ways you can stay in touch with the show and contact me directly. First of all, if you like the show, it would be amazing if you subscribe to it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Problem Solvers. That way, you'll never miss an episode. We come out every Monday morning. Also, I love hearing from listeners. You can go to jasonpfeiffer.com. That's J-A-S-O-N, F as in Frank, E-I, F as in Frank, E-R.com, where you'll find my email address, social media handles, and also you can sign up for my monthly newsletter, The Pfeiffer 5, which is 5 monthly insights and bursts of inspiration for entrepreneurs. It's basically a collection of the ideas that excited me the most that month. So please go check it out. And that's again, jasonpfeiffer.com. And if you want to drop me a line directly, please let me know about the problems you've solved, and I might have you read the letter in a future episode of the show. We can all learn from each other, and that also means you. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media, and this episode was edited by Conrad Martin. We are also online at entrepreneur.com. Again, I'm Jason Pfeiffer. Thanks for listening, and now go solve some problems.